In fact, Greg called me earlier today, said she wants to catch up. Nothing about the woman I'd sat beside in her hospital room suggested a desire to see the man who'd molested her. But the woman who'd stabbed her jealous husband in the neck, that woman would want to catch up with Matthew. That woman would want nothing more. I hate this, Sammy swallowed. This kills me. But Burton took you out and... Don't say it, Sam. I agree with his call. Sammy, I fucked up. I will answer for all that, I promise. But we need to move fast, right now. Please listen to me. I steadied my voice. Gray isn't finished. We need to get tabs on Charlotte and Joanna, maybe Dr. Connor, and get Matthew on the phone. Tell him to stay put. What the hell's going on? Sammy asked, stunned. Get uniformed officers to King, Floyd, and Powers. Then get in your car. Meet me at Piper Point. I'll explain when you're on your way. I'll get it done, Nina, but this is it, he replied. This is the last one. That's on me, Sam. My engine cranked with a smoky coughing fit. Right now, get to Piper Point and bring backup.
43. Annie. The legs of the Queen Anne chair scraped against the foyer's planked floor. My broken shoulder popped, and electric pain crackled down my arm. Wincing, I pushed through. Matthew might wake any moment. I didn't bother precisely calculating Joanna's volume, but I wasn't careless either. I'd read the drug was mostly safe in large doses. Safe and alcohol-soluble. Gray had assumed her mother removed the pills from the medicine cabinet, but in fact I'd needed something to make Matthew compliant, or at least dead weight. Matthew arrived just after Charlotte took off, right on schedule, and long before Joanna's planned return. With everything going on, he was unable to resist a drink and a peace offering. Unable to resist me. On a table in the salon sat the half-empty martini I made for him, complete with a single spirit olive. Joanna might have locked the liquor cabinet, but the piece was a flimsy antique. I'd taken a hammer to it. Matthew stirred as I dragged the chair toward the staircase. Like the liquor cabinet and everything else in this house, Joanna's hearth chair was outdated, but it served my purpose. Strong enough to contain a grown man, but weak enough to tip when he inevitably struggled. I placed the chair at the bottom of the staircase and turned it to face the front door. I wanted the possibility of escape, of safety, to remain in his mind. Hope would make his final moments the most excruciating of his life, perhaps more than the physical pain I'd planned. My heart fluttered. The prospect of watching him slowly come to, piecing together what happened to him, who happened to him, filled me with almost unbearable joy. Hello, Matthew. I smiled, welcoming him back to the waking world. In an instant, any residual grogginess from the drugs evaporated. His eyes opened, bulging as though they might pop, just like Paul's. A tingle ran up the inside of my thigh. His eyes and the protruding vein crossing his forehead gave him a savage appearance, savagely frightened. A thump thud followed frantic breathing through flared nostrils. Matthew began to rock in the chair, fighting against countless layers of duct tape around his legs and wrists, encircling his chest, across his mouth. He shook violently, and the chair tipped over. He moaned as his left temple struck the floor. People were quite predictable. This is the moment I tell you not to struggle, that fighting is useless. I spoke with deliberate flippancy. But to be honest, I'd prefer that you do. Using my weight as a fulcrum, I hoisted the chair back on all four legs, angling it toward the front door once more. A second snapping arc of pain shot down my shoulder. His cheeks puffed as he exhaled in heaving breaths through his nose. Beads of perspiration collected on his brow. His breathing grew more regular as the initial shock of his circumstances melded into what must have been a duller, sustained panic. I'd get that erratic breathing back soon. I smelled his adrenaline-soaked sweat as I leaned down to his ear. Flicking my tongue inside it, I whispered, "I want you to struggle hard, Matthew. I want you to struggle because I want this to last for a long, long time." I willed my warm breath to send shivers through him as I dug into the pocket of my jeans and fished for the knife's black rubber handle. I held it in front of his eyes and watched them widen cartoonishly. The paring knife was subtle, delicate, stained rust red in places with Paul's dried blood, dulled a bit from what I'd done to him and the cat, but still plenty sharp. I thrust it into Matthew's thigh. He howled. As I tore it loose from the muscle, his sharp cry became an anguished baying, like an animal stuck and left for dead by a reckless car. "Why, you sound like you have something to say, cousin." I fisted a handful of his dark locks and jerked his head back, chin to the ceiling. He trembled. I slid the knife between his right cheek and the silver tape. In a single movement, I cut upwards, slashing a shallow cut beneath his eye as the gag split in two, still stuck to the sides of his face.
"Fuck!"
Mouth freed, he wasted no time.
"You stabbed me! What the fuck are you doing, Gray? I'm bleeding!"
A spoonful of spit ran down his chin as he screamed. The disbelief on his face was exquisite.
"You stabbed me!"
I let him think I was Gray all the way to the end. No reason to complicate the story for him since he had only a short time to hear it. I stepped in front of him, standing a few paces away. Time for him to plead his own case, for once. His twisted lips fell flat, a passing silence as he gathered his thoughts.
"Gray,"
he choked.
"What are you doing?"
"What am I doing?" I lowered my voice, training my eyes onto his. "It was sick enough feeling your wet hand slipping in and out of me, but you decided to do it in front of a mirror, didn't you? I had to feel it, and smell it, and hear it,
and see it. I had to watch it." "Gray!"
He coughed, and a moist sound bubbled up. His face flushed with hot blood, spittle still on his lower lip.
"This isn't the way to handle it. Tying me up? Stabbing me? You won't solve anything. You've said your piece, and now this can end. I can make what you've done here go away. It never happened."
"Never happened?"
I plunged the knife into his other thigh.
Gagless, he wailed. The empty home echoed with his stuttering sobs.
"We were both kids,"
he screamed.
My face shook. "You were 17. I'm goddamn family."
He clenched his eyes shut as I shouted,
"Are you going to kill me?"
The distilled fear in his eyes when he opened them was real. I saw that much. The only thing he ever truly cared about, himself, was in mortal danger. I turned up the corners of my mouth. Spreading blood soaked into his tan dress slacks from both quaking thighs. I scraped the stubble atop his Adam's apple with the dull edge of the blade and traveled down his Oxford, picking at each button with the knife's tip. I stopped at his crotch and pressed the weapon's flattened side deep into his zipper. "I'm going to carve you up in all the worst ways."
"Please,"
Matthew screeched. He unraveled into something primal, the whites of his eyes stained red from broken blood vessels.
"Stop this fucking madness."
The chair stuttered twice, three times, against the floor. It'll stop when I'm ready for it to stop.
What the hell do you think is going to happen next? You think that through it all?
I hesitated, losing focus for a flash.
This is going to be
nothing good. This is going to be nothing good for you. My blood's on the ground, on the knife, on you. You've got one move, Gray. Let me go. Go back to D.C. and we forget this happened.
You don't know a goddamn...
Either we both make it, or neither of us do. You kill me, it's fucking over for you. My knuckles whitened around the knife's hilt. He was right. This was messy. I didn't want it to go this way so soon. Between Paul's schemes and the drunken shit Gray pulled at the bar, planning went out the window. I wanted to be more careful. I was pushed.
Let me go,
he said, almost a whisper. His voice was unnervingly steady, as though he was regaining his senses. He wanted me to think he was controlling his fear. Something reflective glimmered over Matthew's shoulder. The mirror on the stair landing. Someone had brought it out from the cellar, set it back into the wall. My cheeks warmed, and the tips of my ears began to burn.
That mirror,
I started, my head pounding.
Who put the fucking mirror back?
Matthew fell silent, craned his head.
I don't know what you're asking.
A voice in my chest cranked. Numbness crawled down my arms and legs. I couldn't stop looking at the mirror now that I'd seen it.
Who put it back?
I screamed. My ears ringing. I felt control draining away like a tide.
I couldn't lose control. Not now. Not...
Gray. Untie me.
Let...
44. Gray.
Me. Go.
Pinewood planks groaned under my shifting weight. I stood inside Piper Point. The foyer, specifically. I must have blacked out again. But I've had nothing to drink. My heart beat against my sternum with each pulse. My right hand throbbed. I clung to a small knife so tightly my fingers cramped. Drops of fresh, oily blood dotted the blade. Why was I holding a knife? A man's voice cried out.
Gray, we won't ever talk about this again.
Matthew? I turned, facing my cousin, and my thumping heart stilled. He'd been tied to a chair in front of the staircase. What the hell was happening?
Please,
he repeated between broken breaths.
We were children. Just go home. Leave me. Leave Elizabeth. No one will hear about any of this.
Was he bleeding? Nausea swept over me, and I stumbled backwards, catching my weight with one leg before I fell. Steadying myself, I noted my surroundings. The house, the staircase, Matthew's injuries. A sensation of detachment edged into my mind. Everything became abstract, surreal and blurred around the edges. Except for one thing, vivid and magnetic. The landing mirror. Matthew's pleading barely registered as I walked towards the mirror. One foot in front of the other, I started up the creaking, sagging steps. The knife remained firmly in my right hand. As I inched closer to the landing, my reflection materialized on the enormous glass surface. The top of my head first, auburn hair tied back, yet disheveled. Then my face. Only I didn't recognize it. It looked like me. Our eyes were the same color, our cheekbones and faint freckles and lashes, all the same. An identical scar from a childhood tumble, nearly invisible, cut a centimeter across the left brow. But I didn't recognize the woman staring back. She was someone else.
This has been a long time coming, hasn't it, Gray?
The woman's voice was my own, yet lowered by an octave. and darker. I don't know who you are, I told her. The woman's lips, exactly like mine, cracked an unsettling smile.
Of course you do, hummingbird.
Silent, I stepped closer to the mirror. Long shadows formed beneath the woman's eyes as she lowered her head, gaze tightly focused on mine.
You've known me for a very, very long time.
She glanced from one side to the other.
Why, this is where we first met, right here in this mirror.
I don't understand. Was I hallucinating from alcohol withdrawal? A severe hallucination of talking to my own reflection? The woman on the other side seemed to find this humorous.
Of course you don't understand. You don't understand much of anything. But I should be thankful for that.
Who are you? Holding my breath, I braced for her answer. The humor disappeared from her face.
You really are that stupid, aren't you?
Another step?
After all I've done for you, I'd expect some gratitude. But that's never been your strong suit.
I froze. How is this even possible? My throat turned to sandpaper, and I swallowed a scratchy lump.
Who the hell are you talking to?
Matthew's piercing voice broke through, mirroring my own thoughts.
Your fucking reflection?
I directed my attention back to the woman who stood before me in the glass. I choked, drew in a staccato breath. You're Annie. I'm... She smiled, wryly.
I'm Paul's Annie. I'm Matthew's Annie.
But most of all, hummingbird,
I'm your Annie.
Her words unwrapped snippets of memory, unspooled them like Christmas ribbon. You called, asked me to meet you at Cirillo's, emailed me the photos, killed. The smile fell from her face.
I had to kill Paul, to save myself, to save both of us.
But that's always been my job, hasn't it, to save us?
He was going to kill you, and me,
she replied. I remembered that night, after the dance floor at Ruby's. Somehow I knew I spoke the truth. The rain had grown into a downpour while we'd been inside the bar. It lashed against our car as we sped through winding darkness. Forehead pressed against the passenger window, I watched droplets streak by like tiny comets. The car abruptly pulling over and braking caused me to bump my head against the glass. My door opened, but instead of tumbling out, I was caught by someone. Paul. He hoisted me out of the car, stood me upright, and then jerked me, violently, into the woods. That's why I'd been so sore Christmas morning, because Paul had been ruthless, because he'd meant for me to die anyway. He hadn't been concerned with causing pain or the memory of it. She did it. She really killed him. I killed him. Matthew seemed to hear the same thing I did.
You murdered your husband, Gray? You killed Paul?
A pause, and his chair bounced up and down with renewed desperation.
Help!
He screamed into the empty foyer.
Help me!
Annie wasn't done reminiscing.
Charlotte didn't dress you for bed that night. Paul sure as hell didn't. He'd gone cold by then.
I hesitated. You dressed me for bed.
A nightie. Silk. Got rid of your soiled clothes.
Annie went on, ignoring Matthew's struggle behind us.
You're a drunk, but you're the best sort of drunk. A rich one. Paul thought so, too. Bet you didn't know that.
What do you mean? It was about money? It didn't make sense for Paul to go through such trouble for funds that were already his.
Not just about money. You're many things,
But most of all, you're a liability. To everyone in your life. To Joanna. To Charlotte. Shit, even to me. But to Paul? Such a capable young man. As dapper as he was, politically astute, you were a ticking time bomb. I spoke slowly. He thought I'd ruin everything, didn't he? The run for office. Everything.
Somebody help me!
Matthew again. Annie replied. That's right, Gray. You want to know the exact moment he decided the risk outweighed any benefit you might provide? I knew the answer to her question. When he came home from Toronto. When I threatened him if he didn't buy me a bottle of wine.
Correct. That's when he decided you had to go. But killing you happened to have an enormous silver lining. An irresistible bonus that swept divorce off the table.
Daddy's trust. I whispered. A peal of laughter flew from her mouth.
And his money problems? The ones you've been ignoring all these years?
She raised her left hand, snapping her fingers.
Gone.
Jesus Christ!
Matthew screeched behind me. Annie shook her head. No doubt he'd originally planned to be diligent about it. There's a million and one ways for an alcoholic to die without anyone batting an eyelash.
You could have taken a tumble, washed down 10 too many Xanax with your 9th glass of wine.
I could have drowned in a marsh
after you took off running into the rainy night, too upset and distraught and confused to know where you'd stumbled till it was too late.
And after the stunt you pulled with Jacob,
I knew it was coming.
He pulled over on the highway shoulder. He marched our drunk ass right down to the water's edge. My teeth began to chatter. The only way someone like me could be a better wife was to be a dead one. Behind me, Matthew's chair scraped against hardwood again.
Please, Gray,
he cried.
You've gone off the fucking deep end.
But I only stared deeper into the mirror as Annie went on.
I'd come prepared, though. I had a feeling things were coming to a head even before the bar. Paul was far too eager to leave D.C. Getting away with murder isn't easy. I'd know. But it's a tad easier in Elizabeth.
My hand grew sorer. I clenched the knife handle so tightly my arm shook.
You're so weak, Gray.
When Matthew first touched us, you couldn't face the truth of what happened. What kept happening. Every time he cornered us, it was me who took it. I took the pain so you wouldn't have to.
But I'm sick of your fragility. The way you were around Paul, your spinelessness made me wretch. I couldn't take it anymore.
I'm Annie. I've lost my fucking mind. Maybe it splintered years ago, but now, confronting myself, it finally broke. My knuckles whitened around the knife. It grew difficult to hold my hand back. I wanted to kill her. I wanted to kill myself.
You were easy to break. A handful of phone messages and some nasty pictures of Paul.
Annie spit.
One dead cat.
You were already so close to the edge.
Pushing you over it was simple.
You're fucking insane!
Matthew shouted again, bouncing the back legs against the floor harder. A popping sound as one of the legs began to crack. It would break any moment.
Someone help me!
What are you going to do? My shaking intensified.
I'll be killing that noisy fucker behind you for starters. Then it's your turn, Gray. You're going into the dark, and you're never coming out again.
She sneered, hate swirling in both eyes.
You don't deserve life. Every privilege has been extended your way, and you've done nothing but squander them. You're a damned ingrate. That's all you are.
My fist trembled.
You are a weak, ungrateful bitch.
Her words struck me like a lead pipe. Her face, her twisted smile. My fist flew into the landing mirror. a spider web of fractured glass splintered across its surface. In an instant, my reflection shattered into hundreds of pieces. Searing heat shot up my arm from the shards buried deep inside my hand. Where there had been a single Annie, there now stood countless more, each laughing wildly, fiery eyes multiplied across jagged edges.
You can't destroy me,
each Annie laughed in unison.
I'm not inside this damned mirror. I'm inside you.
45. Nina. My engines revved as I floored the gas, rocketing down Paul Revere Highway, the place we'd first found the abandoned rental car whirled by. The turn for Adelaya Drive came up, and my weight shifted as I cut into it too fast, tires squealing. Piper Point stood on the distant bluff, ominous, almost evil against the serene backdrop of the inlet marsh, a sprawling, rotten house. Screeching to a halt before the looming pillared porch, a bolt of adrenaline shot through me. The front door stood wide open. Another car had parked out front, one I didn't recognize. A Porsche so yellow it almost looked neon beneath the pink evening sun. A vanity plate read M. King. My stomach knotted. I might be too late. Sliding my keys out of the ignition, I hesitated. I should wait for Sammy. I should wait for the uniforms. I had no idea what to expect, what scene I might stumble on inside Piper Point. But one thing was certain. Danger lurked in that house. Gray or Annie or both were inside. Likely alongside the object of their shared hate. One spark and everything might erupt in flames. I should wait for backup. That's protocol. It's for my own safety. A noise escaped from somewhere deep inside the house, a moaning that sent a shiver down my back. Someone was in pain. Someone needed help, now. I grabbed the receiver. I've got a probable location on Matthew King. Send a bus. I'm going to enter the home. Hold off, Nina, Sammy answered from his own car before the dispatcher confirmed my message was received. I'm minutes away. Possible injury. I'm entering. Another message crackled over. Burton. Nina, just what in the goddamn hell do you think you're... I closed the car door behind me. Heart on fire, I drew my weapon and steadied my arms as I followed the tip of my gun up the porch steps. The moaning grew louder through the open front door, a baying, long and low, that sounded almost wet. The porch planks whined under my boots. My heart pounded its way up my throat. I entered. White with terror, Matthew quaked in a chair he'd been bound to. He appeared to be alone. Someone had wounded him, but his blood-soaked clothes made it impossible to gauge how badly. He wasn't gagged any longer, but from his trembling, he was plainly in shock.
Help me!
I nodded in the affirmative. Both feet now in the foyer, I turned to my left and right. The salon, empty. The library, empty. What I could see of the dining room, empty too. A moaning trickled from Matthew's lips like a dripping faucet. I cringed at the sound. No matter who he was or what he'd done, a sudden compassion swept over me. I fought back a primal urge to put him out of his misery. Instead, I focused on survival. Matthew might be the only person I saw, but we weren't alone. She was here, too. Gray? I called out to the house. No point in keeping quiet. She must have heard my car pull up. From nearly any window, she'd have seen me driving for a mile. Gray, are you here? It's Nina. No answer. Matthew ceased moaning. Hearing Gray's name seemed to silence him. Gray, I know you're here. I cast another glance Matthew's way. The blood appeared to be coming from injuries on both thighs and a cut to the cheek. We need to talk. A sudden noise rang out behind me. My shoulders jumped and I turned. The grandfather clock chimed for the quarter hour. I exhaled and breathed deeply. Gray, please talk to me. Nearly to the stairs, I froze. A thought crossed my mind and my stomach tightened. Perhaps Gray isn't here. As fear inched up my spine, I did my best to call out clearly. Annie? The ceiling creaked, suggesting footsteps in the room above me. If I remembered correctly, Gray's room. The steps traveled to the top of the staircase. The landing mirror halfway up the stairs had been smashed. Shards lay strewn around its base, leaving only sharp pieces jutting from its frame. A pair of legs reflected in its jagged teeth as they came down the stairs, one slow step at a time. Her face came next. Her knuckles bled. Annie? I asked once more as Annie, paced closer towards me. Her hands appeared to be empty, but I trained my gun on her. You found me. She caressed Matthew's shoulder as she brushed by him. Her touch thawed his shock. Voice cracking, he shouted, She's got a knife! I squeezed my gun's grip tighter. Then it's you? It's Annie? Time was the one thing I desperately needed. I'd stall for as much as I could get. Liar or not, playing along with Gray was my best bet. It is. Her voice assumed an altogether different tone. If Gray was acting, she was damn good. Who spilled the beans? Marianne? She's the only one I've ever spoken to. But that was when I was younger, before I knew better, before I had a plan. That's not true, I countered. She paused mid-step. The pictures you sent to yourself, to Gray. You've spoken to Paul. Been intimate with him. She cracked a grin. It turned my stomach. Marianne was the only one who ever knew she was speaking to me, she corrected. Paul thought he'd looked out in the bedroom. That quiet, demure Gray was secretly a woman of fetish. Her eyes glowed like lit candles. I guess he figured she owed him at least that much. Drunk in the streets, freaking the sheets. A lump rose in my throat. She took another step closer. I took aim squarely at her chest. Stop there, I ordered. Don't move. Halfway between myself and Matthew, she halted. No, Paul never knew about me. She shook her head. That grin still plastered across her darkened face. Not even at the end. He needed to think Gray did it. To know Gray had killed him. Hurt more that way. She tensed her jaw. A single car braked outside. Then the clamor of doors opening and shutting. Frantic voices, Joanna asking why the front door was open. The housekeeper, too. The women walked into the foyer together. Cora unleashed a horrid scream. My eyes focused on Annie. I steadied my voice. Go back outside, Joanna. Take Cora. Go back outside and let me speak with your daughter.
Gray? What in Jesus' name? What's happened? Joanna cried. Charlotte called, frightened to death. She met us in town and grabbed those boys, on her way back to Raleigh by now. She gasped,
likely spying a bound Matthew over my shoulder.
What in?
Aunt Joanna, Matthew hollered. Talk to her. Talk to Gray.
Go, I shouted. Ambulance is on the way. Cora turned and leapt down the porch steps. Joanna remained in the foyer. I cursed under my breath. Why didn't she ever listen?
Gray? Joanna spoke softly,
standing shoulder to shoulder next to me.
Gray, listen to Nina. I don't know what's happened here, but...
Really? Annie scoffed. You can't for the life of you piece it together? Any of it? She looked wildly at Matthew, drenched in his own blood, then back at her mother. Joanna choked.
I can.
Her composure buckled.
I can, Hummingbird. And I'm so sorry.
Sorry? Annie laughed. You're sorry? You're fucking sorry? Joanna's trembling shoulder brushed mine as she took a step closer.
Hummingbird, please understand. I've made a mistake. I know I have, but...
Gray whipped a knife out from her pocket. I jolted but stopped short of pulling my trigger. She staggered backwards to Matthew. Put down the knife, Annie! I shouted as she brought it to Matthew's throat.
Please, Gray, he moaned. Please don't.
Joanna turned to me.
Annie? Why did you call her?
Her eyes widened, and her bottom lip shook like the rest of her body. Casting grieved eyes back to her daughter, disbelief poured into her words.
Gray? You're Annie?
That's what happens when you don't get your own daughter help, Joanna. Annie called back. That's what fucking happens when you cover it up. When you lie. When you bury it. It festers, Joanna. Annie continued. It festers and rots, and it never goes away. She pressed the sharp edge of her knife deeper into Matthew's throat. A tiny crimson droplet fell to his collar. It only gets worse until it gets infected. Don't do it, Annie. Don't make me shoot you, I pleaded. Tell them, Matthew, Annie ordered. Tell them what you did. As he mumbled, saliva bubbled from between his trembling lips. Tell them how you betrayed Gray, Annie screamed, rattling the room.
I touched her,
he whimpered. The knife pressed deeper into his throat.
I raped Gray when we were younger. And I'm sorry.
The fury on Annie's face evolved into something else. Something like amusement. You know, Matthew, she started, eyes still locked on mine. If I recall correctly, Gray wasn't the only one down in that cellar. Her voice hardened, cemented in hate. Gray wasn't the only one who saw the devil that day. I narrowed my eyes. You saw the devil too, didn't you, Matthew? Annie asked, knife still pressed against the swollen artery inside his neck. Did you see the devil? Did you look him in the eyes? Matthew shuddered, mouth hung halfway open. Did you see him?
Yeah. Yes, he coughed.
Tell me.
I saw the devil.
Then what does that make you? What does that make you, Matthew?
It makes me a...
His voice dwindled to a whisper.
A bad...
Tell everyone what it makes you, Annie hissed. Tell us all what seeing the devil makes you. Tell everyone what you made me say. What are you, cousin?
I'm a bad girl.
Louder!
I'm a bad girl,
Matthew screamed. His head fell limp, rolled downwards. He began to cry, to heave. Joanna unraveled next to me.
I'll get you help, Gray. I know you need it. I'll get you the help we should have gotten you decades ago.
She sobbed uncontrollably now, too. Despite everything, her tears shocked me.
If I could take it back, I would. I regret it every day. Please believe me. No matter what happens, I'll die knowing I failed you.
She drew in a stuttered breath, clasped her hands together as if in prayer. Shaking them at her daughter, she begged,
I'll die knowing I'm a failed mother, Gray.
I'm not fucking Gray, Annie spat. Her eyes returned to mine. The contempt in them said time was running out. It wouldn't be long before she put an end to it. I swallowed a lump in my throat and tensed. Maybe Gray wasn't the shameless liar Marianne thought. This was always a suicide mission, wasn't it? I asked her, balancing my voice. This was always your plan. Take down Paul, Matthew, then Gray. Her eyes danced around the room. I sensed the pressure building inside her, the frantic search for a next move. But there weren't any more moves. She held a knife. I held a gun. But Annie could still win. She could take them both down. Matthew with a swift stab to the throat, prompting me to shoot her. Suicide by cop. If I had to kill Annie, I'd kill Gray too. Silence swallowed the room. Pounding hearts and heaving breaths, the only sounds. Annie raised the knife, lunged. Joanna screamed. I fired. The gunshot would have rang out across the marsh, echoing through the tree line, bouncing from trunk to trunk, sending flocks of birds scuttling into the air. As I emerged from Piper Point's darkness, I squinted at the setting sun. Police sirens wailed from the front yard. Red and blue lights flashed. Car doors opened and shut. Gun drawn by his side, Sammy's eyes searched mine for an answer. I couldn't give him one. A distant ambulance made its way down Atalaya Drive, followed by a fire truck. Uniformed officers rushed past me. Sheriff Burton slammed his car door, bringing up the rear of the line. When he spotted me, he ran my way instead, yanking his sunglasses from his red face.
Nina, you are fucking finished in this town.
You knew. He stopped in his tracks, breathing heavy from the jog.
What the hell are you talking about?
I spoke coolly, almost detached. You knew about Matthew, and you sat on it because you were told to. Eyes narrowed, he stood in silence. He seemed to be afraid, too. For a flash, I wondered if he'd appeared the same way before Seamus King, decades ago. He ran his hand over his face as if to refocus himself. Then he made for the front door. The conversation was left unfinished, for now. Behind where Burton had stood, a gaggle of sandpipers, the sort of bird the property was named for, perched motionless in the crabgrass, a dozen yards or so from the commotion. Countless pairs of beady black eyes glowered at me. Funny, I thought to myself. I'd discharged a weapon, and they hadn't been startled off. Instead, they scowled at me fearlessly, as though I was an intruder, unwelcome in their world. Epilogue. Nina. 2 months later. This particular March day was a hot one, even for South Carolina. Haze wafted off the asphalt, mocking the whole idea of four seasons. Wiping sweat from my brow, I turned the air conditioner higher, a vain attempt, It broke a couple weeks back, but I still fiddled with it out of habit. What a day to wear black. I drove somewhere in the middle of the convoy as it rolled through downtown Elizabeth. I hadn't felt compelled to get closer to the front. I let everyone else fight over those coveted spots. We drove by all the familiar sights, the sheriff's office on Marion Avenue, the Dairy Queen, filled to capacity with folks fresh from Sunday sermons, the steepled church on Main Street, Blessed Lamb Baptist, Joanna King's church. We'd driven in a long line from the funeral home on the east side of town, the Elizabeth County Cemetery, our destination. Before long, we reached the spiked iron gates that cordoned off the graveyard from the rest of Elizabeth, where the living still dwelled. Two motorcycle officers had dutifully escorted us. Now they waved the line of vehicles onto the grounds, flashers strobing in silence. Pulling round the canvassed open grave, I parked and exited the car. Tugging at the hem of my dress, I drank in the crowd of mourners already gathered. Joanna King stood to one side, in head to toe black. The parts of her face her wide-brimmed hat didn't mask were obscured by enormous sunglasses. Halfway to the graveside, I paused. I took a deep breath and then puffed out my cheeks. It was time. Joanna glanced my way as I approached, then cast her covered eyes back to the gravestone. I followed her gaze to it. It looked better than I expected, cleaner, crisper. I read the name etched across it. Matilda Beverly Palmer.
Join me now in song,
Auntie's pastor announced as the last attendees climbed the tiny slope to her casket.
Bridge over troubled water, one of Tilda's favorites.
The pastor began to sing. Others joined him. Parting my lips, I whispered the lyrics to myself. As I sang, I thought of Auntie, of her long life, of her cotton robe, the one I'd carefully tucked into a box at the top of my closet. Auntie smelled like home, like love and warmth and perseverance. I'd treasure her scent on the cloth for as long as it lasted, like hugs that were otherwise now impossible. I'm so sorry, Nina, Joanna said, startling me. She'd slipped over as the funeral ended and now stood next to me beside Auntie's grave. The only other time we'd stood so close had been that day in Piper Point's foyer. Thank you, I replied, eyes straight ahead. She meant so much to the family, too, she added. Did she? I asked, in a biting tone. Joanna fell silent, focused squarely on the casket. I sought to squash any anger towards her. Auntie's funeral wasn't the place for ill feelings. How's Gray doing? I asked instead. The wound on her leg from the incident is healing nicely. She's on crutches now. No more wheeling about. She lowered her voice to a near whisper. The doctors at the Charleston Hospital seem to have found a combination of drugs that shows promise. There's been no, you know. Joanna seemed to readily buy into the idea Gray and Annie really were two different people, but it was too convenient for me. Still, I wasn't privy to Gray's psychiatrist's conclusions, and Joanna likely was. It certainly gave the Kings the deniability they craved. That's good to hear. I plan to visit her in the next couple days. She'll really like that, I think, Joanna smiled. To be honest, we're both anxious for the trial to begin. I've never been patient, but I know we have to get her better before any of that. She won't go to prison, I replied. She'll stay in a hospital. The irony of my words struck me. Here I stood at Auntie's funeral, assuring Joanna her daughter would be okay. Maybe Gray wasn't a liar, or maybe she was, but the truth was she'd never see the inside of a cell. "Speaking of prison," Joanna said, "are you close to charging Matthew? I understand Marianne Connor agreed to testify." Between that, the statement from Auntie, and, well, everything with Gray, there's a case. A small one, but it's there. Most importantly, his wife Ellen took Susanna with her to her parents' home in Atlanta. I hesitated. I've also lodged a formal complaint against Sheriff Burton. You'll get a call asking what you told the police that night years ago, and what your husband told Burton next. I'd appreciate honesty this time. Visibly relieved, Joanna exhaled. A pang of anger shot through me. The woman didn't deserve relief, not a single ounce. "You've done something terrible, Joanna," I said evenly. "There's no statute of limitations on child endangerment either. If anyone else deserves to go to prison, it's you." She drew in a deep breath, turned her head my way. Behind her sunglasses, I knew her eyes were tightly focused on mine. "Build your case, Detective Palmer. Then do as you see fit." I couldn't tell if her remark was meant as a challenge or an actual invitation. I wondered if a part of her agreed with me, knew she had crimes to pay for. But then Joanna did what Joanna King always did best. She brushed past the uncomfortable, the unpleasant. She buried it beneath her Charleston drawl. "In the meantime, do me a favor, would you? I've made a banana pudding. It's always been Gray's favorite. You mind taking it to her when you visit?" I rolled down my window as I crossed Charleston Harbor. The sea breeze stilled my mind, gave me a sense of peace. The silver cables of the Arthur Ravenel Jr. Bridge whisked by on both sides. The bridge was immense. One of the longest cable-stayed bridges in the Western Hemisphere, I'd read somewhere. A monument to modernity in a city frozen in time. A jarring contrast against a skyline unchanged since the 19th century. Like everything else in South Carolina, the scene came off as appropriately incongruous, a place that truly had no idea what it wanted to be. Its namesake, Mr. Ravenel, had been a prominent politician, first in the state Senate and then Congress, like Seamus King. A part of me wondered if the bridge might have borne his name had things turned out differently for him, for Auntie Tilda, for Gray. When I arrived at the University Hospital downtown, an escort promptly ushered me to a secluded ward. "Would you mind waiting for Mrs. Godfrey in here?" he asked. "Of course," I replied, gauging the space. Sparse, which I'd expected. A handful of cushioned chairs, walls painted a soothing green. A large window overlooked the harbor and the colonial estates, all painted rainbow colors that crowded around it. I sat Joanna's casserole dish of banana pudding on the chair next to me. 5 minutes passed, then 10, then 20. Finally, the room's only door opened, and Gray hobbled in, leaning on one crutch. The tiniest of smiles crossed her face. Standing, I shook her free hand. "It's great to see you, Gray. You look better, much better." It wasn't a polite lie. She did look much better. She wore comfortable sweats, and her hair was tied back into the same ponytail she always kept. But the bags under her eyes had vanished, the dark circles paled. Her skin glowed, hydrated fully in the absence of alcohol.
Should we sit?
She asked, motioning to the chairs. I moved the casserole dish to the other side of me and helped her limp into a seat. She leaned her crutch against the armrest. Banana pudding, courtesy of your mother, I announced. Your favorite, I think. No, she answered. Not really, but it's a nice thought. So, I began, brushing my thighs nervously. You're getting well? You mean to ask if Annie has disappeared? She chuckled, and I wondered if she saw doubt in my eyes, the doubt I held that Annie even existed. I'm on about 6 or 7 different medications, the irony of which isn't lost on me. There's a mood stabilizer, an antidepressant, something for anxiety, something to get me to sleep, another to wake me up. She laughed. All things considered, it relieved me to see her laugh. From what I understood, recovery was inextricably linked to one's frame of mind, their outlook. And regardless of the truth only Gray knew, I did want her to be better. After Matthew, after what she'd alleged Paul had planned, my heart hurt for her. She could have grown into an entirely different woman if she'd had the love and protection family was meant to afford. Maybe she still could be that woman. They tell me to take it one day at a time, Gray sighed, which is what I'm doing. And how about the counseling? Has that been helpful? She rubbed her fingers against her palms. At first it wasn't easy, but I'm getting the hang of it. Talking things out, that is. I've got a wonderful therapist. She reminds me of... She hesitated. Of my sister. I've told her as much, and we're determined to address me and Charlotte's estrangement when I'm healthy enough. I cast my eyes down until the uncomfortable mention of Charlotte passed, and Grace spoke again. But I haven't had a drop to drink in over a month, longest I've gone in years. Funny how sharp my mind's been these days, even with all the medication. You're going to get healthy, Gray, I told her warmly. I know you are. She smiled. Denial's a way of saving yourself from some awful truth, something so terrible, so categorically horrible, you believe acknowledging it might break you. I know now the breaking of a person isn't the worst that can happen. What do you mean? I asked, though I already knew. She seemed to grow tired as she answered, her glowing cheeks flushed with fatigue. When a person breaks, it's a frightening thing, not because of what's undone, but because of what might be unleashed. She met my eyes. The very rotten thing that might be unleashed. But that's the thing I must accept. I have to take responsibility for what I've done and turn the rot into something new. Become a different woman than I was before. A hospital orderly rapped on the door and peeked inside. Mrs. Godfrey, we'll have to be getting back now. Lunchtime. He tapped a leather wristwatch. King. Ms. King. She corrected him. And I know. Every calorie counts. Doctor's orders. That's right, he said, beaming. I'll be back to collect that dish, too. When the desk checked it over, they said they'd never smelled such a yummy pudding. With that, he left to let us finish the visit in private. I stood and helped Gray to her feet, tucking her crutch under her arm. I held the door open as she hobbled towards it. The orderly had vanished somewhere down the hall. I reckoned Gray knew where to go from here. One last thing, Nina. She stopped and turned to another door just outside the room.
Do you mind helping me wash my hands for lunch?
Certainly, I answered. The second door opened into a single toilet bathroom. I stood in the doorway, propping it open as she lathered and rinsed her hands. I passed her a paper towel to dry them.
Banana pudding. I said it's not my favorite, she stated, toweling her hands dry.
She cast her eyes into the tiny mirror hanging above the faucet. They met mine in the reflection.
It's Gray's.
This concludes the reading of When You Find Me by P.J. Vernon. Copyright 2018 by Philip Vernon. This book was read by Amy McFadden and Bonnie Turpin, members of SAG-AFTRA. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Crooked Lane Books and was produced in 2018 by Blackstone Publishing, which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Publishing. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.